Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International. Welcome to the program Family Health Matters. The time right now is 2:09. As we commence this afternoon's program with health news, and inshallah, I'll be sharing with you important information on how houseplants can improve indoor air life, or air quality rather. We will be looking at which plants clean air most effectively and also what to know before you buy a houseplant. That will be followed by an interview with baby love consultant Sister Fatima Osman from KwaZulu-Natal, and inshallah she will be enlightening us on baby love and its program. Of course, it's one of the oldest sleep training companies in South Africa, and she'll be telling us what the program entails. That will happen a little later in the program, inshallah. A reminder to our listeners, if you have any questions, please feel free to call in on our WhatsApp number, or you can also call me rather on the number 082-84-92-786. I beg your pardon, that's the WhatsApp number that you can send your messages to or your SMSs, or you can contact me on the studio number, which is 011-854-1548. That'll happen a little later in the program, inshallah. But for now, let's look at how houseplants can improve indoor air quality. Now, sometimes we wonder whether too many plants are not too good in the house. I know one thing that certainly, many people do is if you have bouquets of flower in your rooms, they always advise you to take it out of the room when you go to bed. Now, let's see what they tell us about houseplants. Now, houseplants have an almost magical ability to actually transform an otherwise drab and dreary house into an aesthetically pleasing, a very peaceful home. But can they also improve indoor air quality? Well, yes, studies conducted by NASA and other agencies suggest that they can. And because improving indoor air quality is an important part of COPD management, which is obstructive chronic pulmonary disease management, houseplants may serve as a harmless addition to the air filtration system in your home. So basically, it actually can really help purify your indoor air. Now, indoor air pollutants such as carbon dioxide, benzene, formaldehyde, and mercury, these are all classified as volatile organic compounds, also commonly known as VOCs. Now, VOCs come from building materials, from your home and personal care products and behaviors like smoking, cooking, or wood-burning stoves. Now, the home and personal products, obviously, it's your doom, your oven cleaners, things like that. Being carbon-based chemicals, now, VOCs are notorious for causing or exacerbating health problems, especially in children and adults with existing respiratory illnesses. And a number of people who have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease use air purifying systems with HEPA filters to purify the air they breathe indoors. While air cleaning systems like these may remove some toxins from the air, they don't remove all. So that's something that we need to remember. They may just remove some of the toxins, but definitely not all of them. In fact, certain types actually raise indoor ozone concentrations above well-established safety levels. So there are some plants that will actually, raise the toxins in the family, in the home. So be careful about that as well. So, which plants actually clean most effectively? So let's look at that. All plants, as we all know, undergo photosynthesis. Now, this is a process that removes carbon dioxide from the air and in turn releases oxygen. The NASA Clean Air Study and Bill Wolverton, retired NASA scientist, found that in addition to carbon dioxide, houseplants are capable of removing a significant amount of toxic chemicals from the air. So now let's look at which plants do scientists actually recommend. Well, after assessing a large number of house plants to determine which was most effective in removing VOCs, the following were found to be top of the list. Now, let's go through all of these. I'm certainly not going to be sharing the botanical names with you because they are so difficult to pronounce, and I really don't want to make a fool out of myself. So I'm going to give you the common names that these plants are actually known by. The first one is peace lily. Now, for many people, the peace lily is an all-time favorite indoor, even an outdoor plant, especially when it blooms in the spring. Now, in the home, this graceful flowering plant thrives in light to moderate or in moderate shade. It tops the list in air purifying plants as it removes benzene, formaldehyde, trichoethylene, xylene, toluene, and ammonia from the air you breathe indoors. So all of these toxins are found in the house, and you know, we're not even aware of these, but alhamdulillah, some of these plants, and I know I've seen many, you know, when I went through all these plants, I realized that there are so many people that actually have them in their homes, like the peace lily. It's a beautiful plant. It's just got that little white a lily kind of flower on the top with green around it, and it's very common. I've seen them in so many people's homes. Okay, so then the next one is devil's ivy, also a very common one found in many people's homes. It's called, well, running a close second behind the peace lily is the devil's ivy. So just after that is the devil's ivy, and many gardening experts say it's the easiest plant to grow indoors, effective at removing benzene, again, formaldehyde, all those toxins I mentioned earlier, xylene, toluenes, and from the air you breathe inside your home. And this indoor plant prefers bright and indirect light. Imagine, you know, we don't even realize there's so much of toxins in our homes. Then the next one is mother-in-law's tongue. With the stiff, upright leaves that reach up to 4 feet tall, they don't call this plant mother-in-law's tongue for no reason. Anyway, this hardy plant makes an excellent choice for beginning indoor plant enthusiasts because it can withstand a variety of indoor conditions. And it also takes only overwatering or not watering at all to kill it. So you can't overwater it, and you can, overwatering or not watering at all. So you need to be careful there. Both of it can actually kill the plant. According to NASA and, of course, other studies, this hardy plant can clear indoor air of benzene, formaldehyde, trichoethylene, xylene, and toluene. So these are the common, toxins that are found in your home. So that's the peace lily, the devil's ivy, mother-in-law's tongue. Then we go on to the next one, which is the English ivy. Now, ivy plants, like the English ivy, are not the easiest plants to grow indoors. But because of the unique trailing or their climbing abilities, they actually make a very lovely addition to indoor topiaries. The English ivy has a natural ability to filter nasty pollutants from indoor air, again, including those same toxins that I've been mentioning all the time, the benzene, the formaldehyde, xylene, and toluenes. Then, or rather toluene, it's called. Then you get the lady palm. The lady palm is every bit as beautiful as her given name, of course. Under the right conditions, this fanning palm is fairly easy to grow indoors and has been found to effectively remove all these toxins as well. All these toxins inside your home. Then you get the weeping fig. The weeping fig grows beautifully in a brightly lit room and may even do well in direct morning sunlight. It does an excellent job of clearing the air you breathe indoors of formaldehyde, xylene and toluene. Okay, so basically these are all those toxins that are found in your house. Then you get the Boston fern. It's a hardy and attractive. The Boston fern is one of the most common of all indoor ferns. And they thrive in warm, humid conditions. But be careful if you are perhaps, you know, sensitive to humidity, then they may not be the best choice for you. Now, if you do choose a Boston fern, you should know that when grown indoors, they effectively remove those toxins again, the same ones I've been mentioning all along. Then you get the dwarf date palm. Now, the dwarf date palm is the only suitable date palm you can grow indoors. It's a small, obviously, it looks like much like the date palm, but obviously a miniature version of it. They thrive in the brightest light you can find and even love direct sunlight. So I'm sure, you know, these are all common ones that, I, like I mentioned before, that many people have in their homes. As an indoor plant, this feathery friend is capable of removing, once again, all those toxins in your home. Then you get the next one, that is the Areca palm. At one time, the Areca palm was on the endangered species list, and indoors, it has the ability to filter out xylene and toluene from the air, and with long fanning leaves, the plant is sensitive to overwatering and does best in bright light. So once again, you know, with most plants indoor, you need to be very, very careful not to overwater them or to underwater them. And this particular one, of course, is very sensitive to overwatering. Okay, then the last one that we have here is the rubber plant. It's last, of course, but not least. Of course, there are many others. It's called the rubber plant. It's easy to grow indoors. It thrives in bright, warm rooms when it's regularly watered and fertilized. As an air-purifying plant, it's best at removing formaldehyde from the air inside the home, and it must be repotted annually until it's reached its desired size. So it's basically those rubber plants. You know, sometimes you find such huge ones. Even at home, of course, you find them at home. Many a time people have them in their entrances or at workplaces also. Many people have them in the reception area. Okay. And then, yeah, basically those are the 10 that I mentioned today. But I'd like to just go through them. So if in case you may not have noted it down or you would like to buy some of these plants, let me go through them so you can once again, you know, if you go to buy them, you know which ones we're talking about. The first one is the peace lily, then the devil's ivy, the mother-in-law's tongue, the English ivy, the lady palm, the weeping fig, the Boston fern, the dwarf date palm, the Areca palm, and then the rubber plant. That's the 10 plants that we mentioned today. Now, before you buy a houseplant, they say, although several well-known studies have found that houseplants are effective at purifying indoor air, some studies point out that the soil and the pots in which they grow, along with the pesticides used to treat them, contain harmful microorganisms that can potentially contaminate indoor air. Now, if you're planning to utilize houseplants as part of a comprehensive plan to improve respiratory health, NASA suggests using one household plant for every 100 square feet of space. And a retired NASA scientist, the one that we mentioned earlier too, Bill Wolverton, says, in order to effectively remove VOCs from the air in your home, houseplants should be kept in energy-efficient, non-ventilated buildings. And also very important, before investing in house plants, make sure you know how to properly care for them and that your doctor is aware of how you plan to use them. And another important point that I think we need to really mention here is that some house plants can be toxic to animals. You know, we have our little cats in the house or little birds in the home. Be careful. And another very important one, our little kids in the home, our little babies that are crawling around and walking around. And, of course, they love, you know, touching and, you know, playing with everything they see, playing in soil and breaking and eating leaves. So some houseplants, like we said, can be toxic to animals, to kids. Before you buy one, talk to your local gardening store or your nursery to see which ones are safest for indoor use. So yes, you know, they can purify the indoor air, but we really need to be careful which ones we buy. Just make sure they're not poisonous ones in any way that can be harmful to you as well. Well, that's it from Health News. Inshallah, when we return, we'll be speaking to Sister Fatima Osman, who's a baby love consultant. She's from KwaZulu-Natal. We'll be talking about the baby love program, inshallah. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program, Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zainat. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, are you sleep deprived? Does your baby keep you up during the night? And would you like your baby to sleep throughout the night? Well, join me this afternoon on Family Health Matters and to tell us more about, baby love. We have Sister Fatima Osman from KwaZulu-Natal. She's a baby love consultant. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Fatima. Jazakallah khair for joining us this morning. Afternoon, rather.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jazaka so much for having me on. How are you today?
I'm fine, alhamdulillah. It's wonderful to be talking to you. Before we really talk about the Baby Love program, tell us a little about yourself.
Okay, I am married with four beautiful kids. I am originally from Johannesburg and I got a degree in law as well as conveyancing. When I got married, I moved to Durban, and in that, we had our first baby, a little girl. Mm-hmm. So, the joys of motherhood and everyone telling us, okay, it's the best thing ever. But my little one was not born with a manual or a switch on or switch off button. So we really suffered with her with regards to sleeping. I mean, she hardly slept. She used to be so dependent on me. She only wanted milk. She was very attached to my husband and I. And it became frustrating after a while and very, there was no bond. There was no relationship. It was really heartbreaking because she was crying. I was upset and there was just no routine. Until we came across this program called Baby Love. And I know there's a lot of stigma about sleep training, but when I heard this, for me, it was like, oh my word, there's help out there. Someone can help me. And, we can finally be a family. And in that, I tried the program out, and alhamdulillah, with the will of Allah, we've got her to sleep throughout the night by the third night of the program. And she was suffering from 6 weeks till 11 months. And, it changed our lives completely. And in that, because it gave us hope, it gave us sleep, I decided to train and become a baby love consultant because I know there's many parents out there that's suffering. So, she's already 11 years. And, when she came into our lives, we told everyone that this is our first and our only child. And alhamdulillah, 11 years later, we have four beautiful kids. All are sleep trained. And, they all have a good routine. So that's where I am. I'm here doing baby love, and I've put my law degree and everything on hold because I enjoy this so much.
Alhamdulillah. And I'm sure there's so many mums out there that would love to know how you actually got that right. Because, it's just something that you just sometimes feel, this is it, not having any more babies, If you can't sleep, have one decent night's sleep, no more babies. But alhamdulillah, thank you so much for telling us all about that. But now, let's just, you actually decided to become a consultant and you left your law degree or your career for that matter. Alhamdulillah, so you better tell us what this baby love is all about then.
Okay. You know, people look at me strange to say that. I mean, you've put aside, you know, something you've worked for so long, you know, your law firm and whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, family comes first, and with this, it gave me the opportunity of being a stay-at-home mom and running something as well on my free time, and it was very flexible. So baby love is all about finding a good routine for your baby. It's a program that basically, it's not hard and fast rules. We sit down with the parents, we find out what their lifestyles are like, what's the problem, where the problem lies, and, you know, we find a solution for them. So I know there's many programs out there that would say, okay, just do these steps and that's it and move on. Our program is very different. You know, we find the problem. We try to get the best solution ever for that parent. And that's what it's given us as well. I mean, we sat down with a consultant. We found out what we were doing wrong with her. For example, we were rocking her to sleep, when she needed to sleep, when she should be fed, what was the appropriate time. I know it sounds like very robotic, but I promise you it isn't. But we found where the problem was. And by following those guides and listening to our instincts, we found a solution for our family that, you know, she started sleeping well, we started sleeping well, and everyone became healthy and happy, and that's what it's all about, finding a balance in your home that's normal and stable, and where everyone is sleeping well. And I mean, without sleep, everyone is upset, everyone is moody, and, you know, there's just no happiness along the way.
Certainly. You know, there's one thing definitely, like, you know, knowing, I mean, we all have babies, we all have children, but not one child is the same as the other. So how does this baby love program work? Does the same program work for the other one as well, for the other child as well?
Okay, so it doesn't, because as you said, I mean, all our children are different. I mean, I have four, and they're all absolutely different. So what I do is we find out what the child's background, you know, whether the child was sick, you know, the child's likes and different, everything about the baby itself. So we try to get very personal to find out what's going on. In that, with the parents, we basically find out what their lifestyle is like, and, you know, what time they would like baby to go to sleep, what time baby needs to wake up in the morning, what activities they have to the day. So I personalize the program. We have a general booklet that has all the general information, mm-hmm. but what I do is I personalize it for that baby and for that family, so it works for all. So as in our book we always state, I mean, our main statement is that if it's not done our way, it's not the highway. We find what works for you, and we tweak it along the way. I've tweaked it for all four of my kids. They all actually train completely different because of their different personalities, and alhamdulillah, you know, it's worked.
Alhamdulillah. Now, with regards baby love, you know, how did this actually come about?
Okay, it was established many years ago by a lady in Cape Town who came about with the program. She did a lot of research with midwives, with clinic sisters, with pediatricians. It was taken over by another mom in Johannesburg who also suffered with sleep-deprived babies. And in that, it just flourished around South Africa. So we've got a lot of consultants in and around South Africa. But for me, it came about because I needed it for my daughter. And I heard about it at a mom's and daughter's class. I took up a baby class, and a lady just told me about this program. She had very negative thoughts, but for me it was, oh my word, it's going to help. So for me, that's how I did the training and decided to implement it, and alhamdulillah, it has worked for me and for many other parents out there.
Okay, so now baby love, is this something that only works for babies? Do you need to start them from a very young age?
Our program starts from newborn, and it goes up to 6 years of age. So you can start any time in that phase. You can start with a newborn, with a five-month-old, with a one-year-old, even with toddlers. We've got manuals for different age groups because, I mean, in the first year from newborn to 3 months, I mean, that first age period, we focus a lot about the mom getting her onto her feet again, talk about postnatal depression, about breastfeeding, a lot about feeding and stuff. But the real training starts from about 3 months onwards. So as I said, it goes up to 6 years of age. So we've got a program designed for every phase of a child's first 6 years.
Okay. So even if a child is already in that habit of, you know, in their own little habits of sleep, they have their own sleeping patterns, which obviously will be when they decide to sleep, not when you want them to sleep. Will this manuals then help as well, or will a consultant be able to help a parent then too?
Gee, it does, because the important thing to remember is that any habit that a person forms, you know, especially a bad habit, it takes 3 days to establish a bad habit. But within 21 days, we can break all bad habits. So whether your child is in a specific routine, whether they haven't slept for, like with my one, I mean, she didn't sleep for the first 11 months, you know, we manage to break it. But the most important thing is that to be able to break these habits, you have to be very committed to the program for 21 days, because within 21 days, you're basically resetting the body. You're resetting the mind, the body, to teach them what's right, what's wrong, when they should sleep, how they should go to sleep, and obviously tweaking it along the way. Important to remember is that with our program, we encourage a lot of love, a lot of hands-on, spending quality time with the child. And the more you do that, the easier it is to get a baby into a routine. But it's all dealt with basically seeing what the current routine is and what needs to be changed along the way.
Are there any specific reasons why babies wouldn't really want to get into this habit of sleeping?
Okay, there is a lot. I mean, there's a lot of changes. Like, for example, if a baby's colic, a baby that's maybe underweight, that's fed all the time, a baby that's overstimulated, that, you know, what happens is that they're okay for a while, they start crying, and then where the rocking comes into play, where we were told always, you know, you need to breastfeed on demand. You need to bottle feed on demand. Every time the baby cries, put the breast in the mouth. Put the bottle in the mouth. The baby's hungry. So all of these small factors end up teaching the baby that, okay, they cannot sleep on their own. They need mom to rock them to sleep, to feed them to sleep, to co-sleep with them. Or some kids don't even sleep at all. So, you know, these habits end up pushing a child to not wanting to sleep.
Mm.
So that causes a lot of problems.
Okay. Would you say there is a right way or perhaps a wrong way of parenting?
No, not at all. I mean, every parent parents differently. So that's important to remember, is that we all parent differently. All our children are different. But what this teaches you is that with grade level, it's just basic guidelines, and it's creating a foundation in your home to set a routine in place to make sure that you're not things, you know, you're not giving into a child's demands, and a child is throwing a tantrum, how to deal with the tantrum without getting overwhelmed by it. So there is no right or wrong with the parenting. This is just about teaching you or giving you guidelines on how to correct certain behaviors and just to do the best that you can as a parent.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned routine being very important. Why is it so important?
Okay, routine is very important. Children thrive on routine because it creates a sense of security around them. I mean, if you do something different for them every day, they probably won't even know what to expect the next day. I'll give you, okay, for us as adults, example. I'll use weight loss as an example. We want to lose weight. But if today we exercise, tomorrow we don't, the next day we decide to eat junk, and it goes on like that, there's no routine in our life, we're never going to get to our goal weight. So it's the same thing with our kids. To be able to make sure that they are independent little beings and that they are confident, that they know what to expect, it's important to create that routine, because a routine also creates boundaries, and there's a sense of security that the child feels secure, that I know what's going to happen next. I know where my mom's going to be. I know my dad's going to come at this time. My mom's going to give me food at that time. This is bedtime. So it just makes them to be, grow up to be healthy individuals. As I said, same thing with going on a diet. You need a routine to be able to find what works for you and to be able to get to your goal weight. So that's important about routine. It just creates a very good foundation in your home, and it gives everyone a healthy sense of being.
I think it also creates a lot of stability in their lives, you know, security and stability. And I think that is what any child really needs in their lives, to know that they're stable and there's security and a lot of love in their lives.
That's true. It does. It creates, exactly. I mean, it does create a lot of stability and love. I mean, for example, if you have to take a child out of their area of play or their routine and take them into a different area, you wonder why they act differently or why they're so fidgety and inquisitive. It's because it's different for them, but they don't know what to expect. So it's very true. It creates love, stability, security, all of that for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it true that a baby should sleep less during the day to be able to sleep well at night?
No, that's not true. I was told that as well. When my daughter was not sleeping, hardly slept during the day, she woke up very often at night. And people always said, no, don't worry, you're not, you get into it, the less they sleep, the better it is. Remember that with sleeping, if they sleep well during the day, they are growing well. When they sleep, their body releases hormones that make them grow. So if they're sleeping well, they will grow in their sleep. When they wake up, they'll be hungry enough to eat, they'll be happy enough to play. And then when it comes to bedtime, because their body had that break in between during the day, they can sleep well at night. And I always ask my parents as well that if you've had a busy day at work or wherever, and your day has been so stressful that you didn't even get 5 minutes to just breathe, come the night time and you put your head down and say, okay, it's time for me to go to sleep. What happens to you? You are restless throughout the night. Your mind is continuously working. You are in overstimulation mode. So it's the same thing with our kids. If they do not get that break in between during the day where they get that rest period, they're not going to sleep well at night because the brain's going to think that I'm always in motion. There's always action happening. I need to be working all the time. So the more sleep you get during the day, the better they sleep at night. And it's always important to remember the daytime states how well the nighttime goes. If your nighttime is going well, it means that the child is well rested during the day.
Mm-hmm. And should there be a specific time that you put your child to sleep during the day? Because what happens sometimes is if you put them to sleep too late during the day, then obviously you're going to once again have that problem of them falling asleep during the night.
Yes, that's true. Yes, each child has a specific time for them to be awake. Like, for example, a newborn to 2 months. They're awake for the day is between 45 minutes to maximum an hour, and then they need to go down for the rest period. As they get older, like 3 to 4 months, the awake time increases, and, as they get older, it does increase. The reason for this is because the body is very immature. It needs to grow. It needs to develop. So in that, if they stay awake too long, longer than their body can cope with, for example, a newborn, if you see a newborn awake longer than the baby can cope with, they go through a period called overstimulation and hyper alert. And you see those signs. You see them being restless. You're seeing them scratching their head. You're seeing them pulling their ears. You're seeing them rubbing their nose, clenching their fists, arching the back, crying inconsolably, are behaving like a Duracell bunny, hyperactive and wired. And you see this and you're like wondering, what is going on with my child? So it's important that a child in a specific age factor can only stay awake for a specific period of time, and then they need to go down for the rest, because when they go through all these periods of being tired, overstimulated and hyper alert, it is causing harm to their body. So yes, in our program we teach you, we ask how old is the child, and then we explain to them the times that they should go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Just a reminder to our listeners, if you do perhaps have any question with regards the program that we're doing, Baby Love, you perhaps have a child that, isn't sleeping at night, maybe give us a call, the number to dial, 011-854-1548, or you can also SMS me on the number 082-84-92786. We have our consultant, Fatima Osman. She's a Baby Love consultant. She's from KwaZulu-Natal, and I'm sure she'll be able to give you some advice. Of course, we will be giving her number a little later in the program, so you can then also contact her and speak to her, after the program, of course. Now, I think we'll just take a very short break. When we return, we continue with our program. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. We're talking about the program called Baby Love, and my guest today is Sister Fatima Osman. She's from KwaZulu-Natal. She's a Baby Love consultant. Sister Fatima, talking about sleep and babies sleeping through the night, from what age can a baby actually sleep through the night?
Okay, with the baby being 100% healthy and there's no colic or reflux or anything like that, a baby from about 4 months, earlier than that, but usually around 4 months of age, they can sleep throughout the night for up to 12 hours without waking up at all, not a milk feed, nothing, So if the baby is around 4 months and they're 100% healthy from then onwards.
So they don't really need to get up to have that feed at night?
And no, they don't. You see, what we do is we focus a lot on the day, on their feed times during the day, their milk feeds, all of that we focus on during the day. So if they're on the correct feeding program during the day for their age, then at night they should be perfectly okay to sleep through. We also have babies that even sleep through from as early as 4 to 6 weeks. And whatever they're getting during the day, it's sufficient for them.
Okay. Now, we spoke about overstimulated babies that, you know, as one of the reasons why they cannot sleep too. But can you perhaps just share with us a few signs for a parent to look out for when a baby becomes overstimulated?
No problem. The few signs, okay, firstly, if your child is yawning, that's the first sign to say, okay, you know, my child is tired. But usually they bypass that and it goes to the other signs like rubbing the eyes, scratching the head. The famous one is tugging onto the ears. Now, when a lot of babies tug onto the ears, parents think it's an ear infection and they rush the babies off to the doctor. But all the child is doing is, it's a sign to say, you know what, I am tired. They clench their fists, they arch their back, they cry inconsolably, they fussy eaters where they don't want to eat. You know, they always don't want to eat. They're very picky eaters. Or the famous one that you see is that they behave like hyperactive kids, you know, like Judicial bunnies. You see them walking, running, crying, but next minute you see them running from one end of the house to the other, and you're like, oh my word, my child is so active. In the meantime, your child is already at the point of being hyper alert. So these are simple signs to say, you know what, my child needs to sleep. I need to now create a sense of sleep time for my child and put them down to sleep. So it's important to remember this, that with our Baby Love program as well, we don't just say, take your baby's yawning, put them in the cot and walk out. We talk about setting the stage for sleep because that creates a sense of security that now I'm sitting with my child, I'm spending a bit of quality time with them, create a sense of warmth and love, and then you make your child sleep thereafter.
Is there any other way to make a sleep, or rather our babies sleep without rocking and patting? Because I think that is the most common way of putting a baby to sleep.
Yes, no, definitely. That is, and some of them find it the easiest way. There is. There's a way that we say you set the stage for sleep where you spend time with the baby. You know, you spend quality time with the baby. You can even introduce using a dummy, a blankie, you know, other objects besides the bottle or the breast or rocking. So what we do is in our program, I explain to you a step-by-step way of teaching the baby that it's time to sleep. We also talk about light and dark, the difference, you know, teaching the baby when it's light to be awake, when it's dark, it's time to sleep. So we teach the moms and dads, okay, this is the step. So we give them 3 simple steps to follow, and in that what to do next, like how to go into the room, how to place baby down. We talk about using music in the background, the fan noise, so some noise in the background. We make sure that there is some light. So in that, we talk about it more in detail. So there is a better way to teach baby to sleep independently without the parent always being there.
So you don't really need to go and lie down with your baby for that baby to fall asleep.
No, you don't. You don't. You can create a sense of security and setting the stage for sleep for baby, which will teach baby that, okay, this is the next step. I can actually fall off to sleep on my own. I mean, with my 4 kids as well, alhamdulillah, after I've done the program with my eldest one, you know, they all know when they take their blankie or their taggy and or the dummy, and they go in, I put them in the cot and read for them, and they're fast asleep thereafter. So we don't have to lie with them, sleep next to them, wait an hour, and then walk out of the room. They know it's time to sleep because we've taught them, what to expect.
Okay, and with regards training babies, are there any, harms by training your baby to sleep?
Actually, there isn't. I know a lot of people have come to me, like when the moms come to me, they say, okay, will it make my child sick, abnormal, feel insecure? Would it hurt my child in any way? It actually doesn't. It actually creates them, allows them to become independent, positive little human beings. We talk about, when the moms come to me, they say, okay, you're going to do the triad method. I can't do the triad method because it's just something I don't believe in. And I said, that's fine. Our program offers 2 types of sleep training. One is a tender touch, where it's a more tender approach, where you're still in the room, but you're not physically rocking baby or lying next to baby. There's steps that you follow again. And you're in the room, you're still calming baby down, so you're not leaving baby to cry. And the other one, which is harder, is the cry out method. And this, we also talk about that in detail. I promise you, and I always tell my moms and dads, if you look at my four kids, you know, I promise you, they've got minds of their own. My youngest is 22 months. And, you know, they're happy, they're positive. If there was something wrong with them, firstly, my husband would have picked it up, being a medical doctor. And the schools would have said, you know, their teachers would have said, there's something wrong with your children. Your children are not normal or anything like that. So I promise you, doing the sleep training does not harm them, does not hurt them in any way, even leaving them to cry. A lot of people have this bad notion about leaving a child to cry.
That's what I was going to ask you. You know, you find some people putting their children to sleep, and they say, well, just leave the child, don't interfere, let the child cry to sleep. I don't like that, but tell me, does it work?
It does work, but we do it, you know, a lot of your parents go in and say, okay, leave the child, walk away, and that's it, and leave them to cry for 2-3 hours on end. We don't believe in that. There is a time limit, then you go in and you do check. You do inform the, you know, you go in, you make sure the child is okay, then you do come out. So, you know, you have to do it in a controlled, the crying has to be done in a controlled environment, because if anything happens to the child, like the crying changes to something else, you need to be around. You need to go in again and you need to check up on your child. So it's done in a very controlled environment. But remember with crying, crying releases stress hormones that help your body to repair from the damage of overstimulation. I tell my parents that if you are having a bad day and you are very tired and you just sit down and you start crying, how do you feel afterwards? You feel relieved, you feel much more happier, you just feel more calm. It's the same thing with kids as well. So it doesn't affect them in any way, it does not hurt them. They do not grow up with insecurity problems. They actually grow up much healthier and more independent.
Okay, very quickly, I think we don't have much time, but, you know, with regards to the different routines for babies at different ages, I'm sure there are. And also, would you like to just share a little bit of his advice for our parents for the parents who are sleep deprived?
Okay, the most important thing to remember is that our babies need us to guide them. They need us to show them what is right and wrong. Our children do need that. They need our guidance. So you want your children to grow up and say, okay, you know what, I grew up in a healthy home. I slept well. I had a good family. And important to remember this, that with a baby being sleep deprived, they do not reach their milestones on time. They become very fussy eaters. They're very dependent on the parents. And that's where a lot of parents lose each other along the way as well. Because you notice that moms are more with the children, the dads are somewhere else, and then it's always about the child. So I'm telling my parents out there that, you know what, we have four kids, alhamdulillah. We still have a life of our own. My husband and I still have time together, knowing that my kids are in a good routine. They sleep by 7, latest 7:30. They're up the next morning. They're happy. They're healthy. They're growing well, alhamdulillah. And this is what I want to give other parents out there, that you can have a normal, healthy, happy life with children in your life. And I always tell my husband, you know, at the end of the day, I didn't marry him for my kids. I married him for him. So when my kids are grown up and gone out, at least I know we can still communicate.
Yes.
A lot of parents out there can't, because they're so focused that it's all about our children and they lose each other. So you don't need to. You can be happy and normal. And with a routine comes flexibility. We have a very flexible, a healthy life. We have weekends away. We have everything along. So we have a routine during the week. But come to a weekend, we enjoy time out, flexibility, grandparents' house, and we live a normal, happy life. So, you know what, you can have that life.
Alhamdulillah. I'm sure there would have been more questions that we would love to have asked you, but unfortunately, we've run out of time. But jazakallah khair. And just quickly, your contact details, if anybody would like to know more about Baby Love.
Okay, my pleasure. My cell number is 082-559-1202.
Right.
My email address is Fatima, FATIMA, at baby, BABY, hyphen love, LOVE, .co.za, or you can go onto our website, which is www.babylove.co.za for more information and everything else about Baby Love.
Okay, jazakallah khair. And if anybody would like more information, or if they didn't get the number, they can always contact us.
Jazakallah so much for
it's
this time.
It's a pleasure, and we do wish you all the best, inshallah. And jazakallah khair for being our guest today. We certainly do appreciate
it. Ameen. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. you, and assalamu alaikum to all our listeners out there, and thank you for listening.